Welcome, everyone. This is Calling the Audible. You're watching to us or listening to us, coming to you live from FPF Studios. I'm your host, Peace Del Ruiz. Simon Dagenet, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Don't interrupt the introduction. This is a once-a-week podcast. For those of you who have not yet watched it, we have a lot of new teams, of course, starting with us in Tier 4. Hopefully, you have found us yet. If not, you'll be listening to this later on Spotify. We're now on Spotify.
Yes.
As well as any other platform that you get your podcast from. And if not, just get Spotify because it's free. The other voice you heard saying yes in the background, Eagle, stop interrupting the goddamn introduction, is the Eagle at Master Control. He is producing the show. He's building the set as we go because it is week one. We have a little bit of a redux in the fall season. It's a little bit more chill. It's myself, it's Simon, it's Eagle, smaller production staff. Brought you in the smallest, the tightest studio space you can ever imagine. You'd figure being at the height of recreational sports would get us like a high rise, downtown Montreal. Nope, this is all a lie, folks. That's not really downtown Montreal. It's not all green. We're in the studio. We're having a good time. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to fall season.
Can we get like downtown Montreal, totally Canadian sort of background?
I think that's what we have.
That actually is the background.
Nice.
You're not seeing it through your luxury windows?
That's where we are.
Yeah.
That's where we are, just so people know. All you were saying is fake. We're not in a container. We are downtown Montreal.
The thing that's been most in the news for the past day or so, the unfortunate passing of Perkins. I know you thought I was going somewhere.
Yes, no.
How many times are you going to watch Gator and Deliverance this weekend?
It just won't be the same.
I know, man. It's a tough loss. My favorite story about Burt Reynolds was there was a tabloid, for the life of me, because I'm getting old and forgetting things, can't remember which one, a tabloid put out a negative story about him.
What?
And he rented a helicopter, he had a horse ranch, and he dumped I don't know how many pounds of horse manure on the building, because tabloids back then, news was so big, they had their own like spot on the high rise, so dumped it directly on their offices. And was willing to pay whatever ticket he got for that. So that's pretty badass.
I might just watch the Archer again. Because it's just the field with Burt Reynolds.
I'll be doing Smokey and the Bandit. Smokey and the Bandit is probably my favorite. Eagle, do you have a favorite? That's the last time I'm calling you for a while. But do you have a favorite Burt Reynolds movie?
I wouldn't say a movie per se.
Okay.
I always love seeing him show up on a Friends episode that you haven't watched like for the first time. You're like, Burt Reynolds!
Yeah. All right. That's fair. Team that showed up for week one, Braves, 2.5 Dans. Not a surprising result, 38-18. Will these types of matchups always be tough for Joey Taylor, or will he find a way to make that specific offense work against the top-end teams?
What do you mean?
I believe for me, what he's done statistically in FPF, the way he's changed the lower division of FPF, which is the greater percentage of the league, which we're seeing now in Fall Cup, for example, where like up into Tier 2 we have Division 6 teams and Division 5 teams.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So now playing the style that Joey Taylor does, will it always make him tough for him to beat teams like the Braves, or can he find a way to make that system like unbeatable to even the top tier teams?
I find that his system works very, very well for pretty much wherever Joey has played up till now. So he's not
to Div 3 basically.
Yeah, Div 3, Division B. I don't think that his system would work in a division like Division 1 due to how it's currently being refed. This isn't based on Joey or it's Division 1. If you watch Division 1, it's more physical than the other divisions. The guys hold more, they know the referees can't see everything. So there's a lot more holding, there's a lot more pressing and man coverage, and the windows are tighter. And in something like Joey's system, where he relies a lot on
creating space.
Creating space and slants and levels. If the guy jams receivers and they press too much, the receivers won't be able to release and the levels won't be there.
So even if he surrounds himself, let's say, with absolutely elite level talent, so let's say the best receiving crew you can think of, you know, if he had someone like a Ked Moore and he had someone like George Garrepy and he had guys who were just difficult to press and difficult to get up on.
The problem is when you move up divisions, what works against a guy that presses like man coverage is to blow him off the top. right? Mm-hmm. If you're lining up a yard, you line him up a yard away from him, and the guy's backpedaling already, you should be able to burn him over top for 25 yards. Mm-hmm. The problem is Joey doesn't have that arm to use that disadvantage. He knows it. He doesn't use it in the system, which is good for him. But the more you move up, the more the guys are able to press and not get beat on short patterns, the tougher the windows get. And he doesn't have that ability to just blow off the top the way we see in guys like Dan Zara, Joe Meyer, Kevin White. And that's why I think his ceiling is there. Mm-hmm. But listen, he's still going to be playing a recreational sport for as long as he can. He's still been very, very successful. You said, he might be Hall of Famer too, just because of what he's done, even up to now, for what he's done up to now. And there's no reason to knock on Joey Taylor for forever playing in Division III, where his own ceiling
if that is truly a ceiling, I agree. And again, the statistical accomplishments speak for themselves. And again, to me, when you have an influence, because it's Hall of Fame, not Hall of Talent.
100%.
So if you can have that level of impact, the way he's literally changed the way the quarterback position is played up to Division III.
Yeah, there's a
lot of guys who in the past would not be able to throw in Division 4, Division 3, you know, and or even move up from Division 6 to Division 5, and they learn things and they see things that work, that his playbook has sort of permeated through the league, and it's making guys better.
It's his playbook that a lot of guys are taking, not necessarily knowing that it's Joey Taylor's playbook.
Yeah, they don't know where it's from.
If you see Greendale Yumi being played, their success in lower divisions up till now, for instance, has been tremendous. But it's Joey Taylor's playbook. The guys who are playing against Greendale Yumi Means might not know this and might think, oh, this team is very good and their offense works and they're taking plays away from Greendale Yumi Means, but really they're taking plays away from Joey Taylor.
Yeah.
Right.
Is this the best they could have hoped for in a game against the Braves?
You lost by 20 points. If there was a spread, most likely would have been somewhere around 20 points. I would say maybe between 18 and 25. So all things considered, they probably, 2.5 of them probably would have beat the spread. Mm-hmm. Which is the most you could hope for in a situation where a Division III team plays a Division I team.
Yeah. We saw in the past, Braves bring up sort of low division rusher. We see it again now with Julien Payman.
Who has played with him in the past.
Sorry?
They've played with the Braves in the past.
No, 100%. But I'm just saying, not necessarily just for the season, but I'm saying like that seems to be something they're doing, is bringing guys who don't necessarily have the pedigree. Is that something that they can use to their advantage, given the fact that a lot of high division players may not know him, but the fact that they themselves are no name players to FPF, coming into FPF, and now they're willing to take a chance on a guy, for example, like Julien Payman, who we know is very good, who we always knew had top level talent. Is this something where the Braves can take advantage of, knowing that a lot of higher division teams that are established in FPF won't take chances on guys like that?
I think that, well, we've seen it with Montreal's Finest a few years ago. There's a few teams in higher divisions that are willing to take a chance on, say, up-and-comers, because mm-hmm. They're cap-friendly, because the teams, everybody's getting older, right? Like, it's nature. Everybody's getting older every season. At some point, you're going to have to find somebody faster, younger than you are to play rusher or to play certain positions that requires more speed.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the best ways to do it, is to go find somebody that could be potentially younger that you don't necessarily know or you've met and wants to play in a higher division and give him a shot.
That's
worst case, it doesn't pan out. Mm-hmm. Right? Worst case, your rusher doesn't work out and by week 3, you replace him. But it's a good way to give him a shot, see what he could do. And if he's able to play rusher, you could give him some snap on offense without risking too much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you can't do the same thing with other positions like snapper or safety or quarterback, where you can't just put somebody in Division I and hope it works out. But as a rusher, the impact that he could have is great. But
the risk is mitigated.
The risk is almost minimalistic, right? There's only so much you could do as mistakes that could cost your team before you bench them.
So Braves beat 2.5 Dans by 20 points. Another team losing by 20 is Lightweight in their matchup with Conspiracy. I want to quote the most quotable player in FPF, because he always talking about himself, Justin Blanchard. He did say prior to this game, losing by 20, that's a win, right? He said this before the game. The
day before, we said if we lose by 20 or less, it's a win to us.
So did it feel like a win?
100%.
All right.
100%. Awesome. I never felt
but
more like a win.
What specifically made it feel like a win? Was there elements of the game that made it feel like a win?
Well, so they scored 48, but honestly, there was a few stops. We had two interceptions on defense, which is a lot.
How many interceptions did you throw?
One.
So you're saying as you threw less interceptions then?
New career record.
No. And it was like on the last drive too.
So did you outplay Dan Lazard in that game? Because he threw two interceptions. You threw one.
No,
efficiency though. It's all about the new metrics, new math.
The new metrics. So
you were a more efficient passer than Dan Lazard.
So less interceptions. Less turnovers.
Less turnovers.
But the problem is we had safeties, so they're also turnovers. No, but all in all, like if you consider what Conspiracy could do with that roster and how strong that team is, they didn't play up to their potential. There were moments where they should have been able to score, where they threw interceptions in the red zone. A few plays that didn't go their way. You're up by 15 before half and throw a pick six before the half to be up by only 8. It's a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
Right? Like, at the end of the day, the game didn't matter for either teams. We knew we were not going to win. They knew they were not going to lose. And the game got out... Well, it didn't get out of hand, but the game... They took a lead that we couldn't overcome, which is fine. But they weren't as dominant as they could have been.
Yeah.
That's why it feels like a win to me, is that we didn't get destroyed by this team where they should have been winning 55-12.
You talked about their roster. Do you think this is the best group that Dan Lazar has played with?
No. Well, they were missing Zach Grenier.
So can you compare them to...
They were missing Zach Grenier today. That's the thing I'm leading to, Simo. Today, yesterday. They were missing Zach Grenier this week. There's a few... I really like the roster that they had last spring season when they had... they still has AJ Gomes, phenomenal player with Dan Lazara. He still has Zach Grenier. The new additions of Matt Petrone, Matt Kerouac, and Marco Masiotra, it's good for them. Like, it's a good mix. He brings in veterans, but we know that there's a reason they're missing a few guys. Like, Khalil Kerr can't play for them because he's playing tackle football, so mm-hmm. he's not available to play fall. Same thing with Jared Taylor, who also can't play fall season. So there's a few guys that would most likely be better players for this offense, but can't necessarily fit because they can't play this season. So you're looking around to find new players to play with. The addition of these three guys, Marco, Matt, it's very good for them. Like, it's a very good fit. It's fun to see. It's not ideal. It's not the best team they could have, but I think it's the best they could do with what they have.
Is this the prelude to the new Dan Taco Lazara led D-Boys?
No, that was last fall when he was actually the quarterback.
No, but I'm saying,
for D-Boys.
Like, is this the sign though? Like, now that we've seen him with D-Boys, now we see another season with that core. Do we think that's what the team, that's what D-Boys will do moving forward?
I think it's the other way around. I think that Dan's moving up and D-Boys is slowly fading out. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling like if anything, D-Boys are trying to recycle themselves just to remain relevant, but they're slowly fading away because the guys don't necessarily want to play anymore. They're losing their players and they're not competitive anymore without key pieces.
Yeah. Some big news this week.
Okay.
It's been all over the news stream. A story that will affect a lot of people and what they see tonight in NFL football as they set their starting lines for fantasy, because Le'Veon Bell not playing. You know I'm bearing the lead. You know I'm going to bring it up at some point, but
I know it's
for now.
I wonder how long he could prolong.
So what's your stance on that? Like, on the idea that he's holding out, essentially.
He's not playing?
He's not playing, and he's holding out, and the season's about to start. Your thoughts, because I'm curious, because I know your thoughts on a lot of these things, and we tend to disagree, so I'm just curious.
Okay, so there's a few ways to look at this. As a player, if I was a player on, let's say, the Steelers, mm-hmm. a teammate of his, it's very selfish to think that you can hold out for more money.
But it's not selfish to think he can make more money and support his family for longer and give them a better life, also, but I want him on my team.
Also, at some point, like... You already make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
How much more do you need?
What he's worth? Because wouldn't you want more money?
Depends.
Eagle, do you
at
want
some
more
point.
Money?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean.
So the thing is, you can't compare what you make to what he makes because nobody wants you. You're not valuable. He's valuable.
Well, not nobody.
Nobody. Not nobody. Zero people. Zero people in the NFL.
Not a single person.
Zero people in the NFL are calling you.
That's fair. But. No, but that's the point. Like, if you're a teammate of his, and yesterday that was brought up in the news, like the O-line of the Steelers talked to the press saying that they think it's selfish and disrespectful to them, saying we're the one making holes for him too. Like, they're part of this offense. They're part of the running game. A running back can only be as good as his O-line. at some point. Like, you could be as good as you
want. Okay, but it's not his fault that the value is set higher from skill position.
No, it's not his fault. It's also not his fault that the linemen feel that way.
Yeah.
Right? There's only so much you can control. What you can control is you can hold out for as long as you want, but at the end of the day, you have a job to do comes week one, and you should play for 16 weeks, do your job, and then, you know, fight your battles when you can, but you can't. Like, he is losing a lot of money too by holding out. He's losing almost $1 million a week by not playing.
Of course,
right?
But the goal is to hopefully make more.
100%. The goal is that even if he loses a little bit now, he's going to make more in the long run.
It's a move that's no doubt angering the selfish but Steeler fanatical Robert Campana, president of FPF.
For sure.
Other big news this week: Kevin Wyeth showing up with a tournament ball from the United States, a white ball. Asked me on his way into the field.
Oh, that's what you meant.
I
read the script. I was very confused.
Yeah, he's got a white ball, perhaps a second white ball, but one for certain. And he asked me, "Is this hippies? Is this ball legal?" And he didn't play with it this week because the laces have not yet been changed. And as Robert Campana is leaving the room, he shakes his finger no. However, as a member of the rules committee, I personally looked through the rules and didn't see anything regarding ball color. The ball seems to be official size. There's nothing about weight, nothing specific about weight in the rules. Eagle of Master Control, you're also a member of the rules committee.
You're right. You absolutely are right. They always say you need to have an adult-sized ball.
It's definitely an adult-sized ball. I would venture again to say he has two adult-sized balls.
Nice.
Not knowing personally, but... So now Eagle and I, we have sort of one perspective being on the rules committee. Robert Campana knows what he would like for the league, and that's his perspective. Simon, what are your thoughts? Sort of as like a semi-outsider, because you've been a part of the rules committee in the past. You and I are actually the alternating members.
Yes.
When you can't go to the meetings, I'm on it for that year. Yeah. Exactly. So now that you're not on the rules committee this year, what is your outsider's opinion?
Honestly, I don't mind it. As long as it's... wooden regulation that's saying like it's not, you're not using a junior ball, you're not using a Nerf ball, it's a football adult size, and it's not if it brings you an advantage, if it helps the offense and not negates, but if the ball is easier for you to throw and easier for everybody to catch, I have no problem with that because it helps the offense and the defense. Right? If you're using if you were using, let's say, a ball that's super slippery unless you're wearing a certain type of gloves and the defense not wearing that type of gloves and they can't catch your ball, that would be an unfair advantage.
You're greasing the ball.
Yeah. Right? But this is not the case. He's just using a white ball. If he wants to do it, I don't see any problem. I don't have any problem with it. I think it's almost cool.
Give me thumbs up, thumbs down. Is your issue color of the ball or size of the ball? Color. So we're going into a color issue. That's the issue.
This is terrible radio.
Yeah. Rob doesn't realize he's not on radio. You can't continue the conversation past just the initial comment.
And you can't listen to him.
Yeah, I know. It's my fault. I shouldn't listen to Rob. This is where we're at. There are some changes this season.
Okay.
For the Fall Cup. One of them not referring to balls. The color of balls.
Okay.
But a lot of them referring to how it's been set up. Some cap rules, some changes, and the way it just physically looks with tiers rather than the groupings that we had last time. And the actual, like, we had three rounds before the championship. Now there's two single rounds. Who would like to weigh in first? Eagle, do you have some time or are you still working on?
No, I'm good.
Okay, so I know you're pretty good at explaining rules and stuff, so I'll let you sort of take the lead for a second.
Yeah, sure. And also, just to add to that, beforehand, so last season, we went through this whole tournament style spreads and the whole thing. And this time around, we kind of felt the spread, as much as it was kind of cool last year, it was very gimmicky in a certain way. And it didn't really change any of the results or the orientation of how the tournament structure played out. And so we kind of looked at it this year and said, you know what? Let's just have everyone register and see how many we get. And we got 48 teams, which was nice. And then we said, okay, well, where are the real divisions in the teams? So we took all the teams, 1 to 48, added up their cap space pretty much, and there was significant divide at certain thresholds, which just happened to work out at 12-13, 24-25, 36-37, instead of the team breakdowns. So I said, okay, we're going to do four divisions. That way the teams are reasonably grouped together. And we're just going to do kind of like a mini season with a round robin within your group. And then based on the results of that, everyone makes playoffs. You end up in a grouping with teams that finished similar to your record. And it could jump in between different tiers so that we had kind of a still competitive playoff structure to it too.
Yeah, so other than the top four teams, which we expect to be by far the strongest teams. Those teams, the teams that finish top four, if they end the way we expect, because someone can tank and it changes everything completely.
100%.
But, which happened last year, and that we're like, ooh, that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, so but I don't think anyone's going to purposely tank. And there's so many games, the variance is going to be limited as opposed to last year. We have much smaller sample sizes for the rounds. The top four teams will not be relegated into another division.
Okay.
Into another pool. Everywhere else, the lowest two of each grouping of four will be relegated down, while the top two of the previous will be relegated upwards. Okay. Not relegated, but promoted upwards.
Yeah.
So it still has the tournament feeling, but we have a larger sample size of games to choose from. And
it's somewhat subjective.
Because my opinion, and I know you agree with me on this, Simon, is if we're going to go with the spread has to mean something.
Yes.
So therefore, your idea, Simon, was let the team actually start with the points corresponding to the spread. So the underdog, let's say there's an underdog of 20 points, they're up by 20 to start the game, they're up 20-0
to start
the game.
Yeah, so it feels real.
It feels like there's an actual circumstance. I don't want to go that far. To me, I would just award greater points for beating the spread. Like, to me, you don't win a bet by just winning the game and not being the spread.
100%.
So
if you bet against the spread, you don't win just because the team won.
Yeah. So I understand it's not sort of like quote-unquote football, but who cares? Because this isn't quote-unquote football. It's FBF. It's our own league. We can do whatever we want. So I thought if we're going to go with the spread, like, let the spread actually matter. So I felt like the worry was, what if the spread gets too gimmicky? I felt it was too gimmicky last year because we didn't actually use it. Not really.
100%.
Not in a way that actually mattered.
I agree that we said we would use it, and in the end, it didn't have a real impact on standings and season and stuff like that. So it just felt like, we put numbers there for teams to sort of play towards something, but it didn't mean anything. Whereas the reason I brought up the idea of starting points instead of spread is it gives, like, teams that don't necessarily pay too much attention to all the articles and all the podcasts and stuff like that, if they show up to their game and after the first drive, it's 26-0. It feels way more real than thinking you have a 20-point spread against you in this game.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're playing the game, you start on defense because you lost the coin toss. Coin toss.
Yeah.
And the other team scores, which is, you know, normal. And you look at the scoreboard and it's 32-0. Like, oh, okay, so we can't really fuck around anymore. Like, we're down 32 points. Yeah. We gotta get going.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel it gives a feeling of, if you're the higher you see and you're down 25 points and there's only 40 minutes left in this game, the attitude's gonna change throughout the whole game, and it's gonna give a feeling to both teams how you need to play this out. And if you're the lower seed and you see the scoreboard, you slowly feel that lead wilting away from you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crushing feeling.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. But if you manage to hold on and you win by a single point at the end, you made it.
Of course.
We also didn't like, I mean, that whole idea. It's like, yeah, you're losing and then you're winning and nothing really like happened in that game, right? So it changes the entire outcome of how the game is played, where it's like one team needs to be on full octane and the other team is specifically playing like prevent, conservative, just to try and hold that type of lead and kill the clock, which is fine in terms of a strategy, but you're kind of forcing them to play that way because of the spread, you know?
Well, you could be forcing them to play that way, but then the other team also knows you're doing it. So you can't be running these super safe plays all the time, because then you're going to play a defense that takes that away.
Mm-hmm.
And then your first play is going to be an interception. It's worse.
It'd be fun too. Is like a team that the other team expects to play safe and you take a shot over the top.
But yeah, that's it, right? There's so many possibilities. Yeah. It's like saying, oh.
But so this is a rule that doesn't exist.
It's
so let's not focus too much time on it. There were some changes like we talked about. We're going to continue to explain it in a more real way throughout the season as it becomes more and more relevant. As we look at teams that may be promoted, may be relegated, one team, for example, that may, if they continue to perform in this way, may put themselves in a disadvantage. Keyport Lockstars, a surprising win, 25-13 over Les Banlieusards. Keyport Lockstars actually won the game. There was some rust on both sides, but do you think really that was the case for Banizari? Was that the reason why the game got away from them?
Well, Keyport Lockstars. It's going to be a terrible name to say all season. Keyport Lockstars.
For me, it's the opposite. Banizari will be.
Really? Banizari? So the thing with Keyport is it's a good team. It's made of very good players. I feel like Jeff Rosenblatt's playing a little bit out of his comfort zone. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a reach for him to play at this high. But listen, he's got the weapons around him. The defense is very good. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to doubt against what Keyport Lock could do as a team. The thing is, if they keep winning, they're going to end up in seeding that's going to have them play against teams like the Braves and Conspiracy in the playoffs, which is not necessarily what they would like.
Yeah.
Whereas if they would lose a few games and they end up playing teams like Lightweight or Sweaty and Beers or Dirty Dogs, it's more favorable for them.
I couldn't agree more. How many games do you think Keyport Lockstars need to lose to end up in the right pool? As weird a topic as that is.
All of them.
Okay, so it's already too late.
Just lose your games. Don't win games. But yeah, there's a chance that
if they do win though, and they end up sort of higher, do you think they make the switch to Rob Mashtuba quarterback?
Are they allowed to? Cap wise,
I don't know.
There is no cap in tier one for
there
QB.
We go.
There's no cap.
Yeah,
there is a cap. It's like 560 or something. So
not really.
Yeah, not really.
So there's no cap.
Not really.
Well, I just learned that now.
All right,
and I'm a captain in tier one. That's interesting. Okay, well, yes. Then yes, maybe they could switch it around. Yeah. Jeff Rosenblatt could play snapper for Rob Mashtuba if they play in the playoffs. Well, that's stupid. Because then even if they are in the bottom seed, then your Division I quarterback is going to play for that team.
Well, it won't go to the bottom. It'll go to a lower seed, not the bottom.
Even if they go to the bottom seed, they could still have Rob play quarterback.
Yes.
That sounds dumb.
A team that could have benefited from either quarterback, or teams that could have benefited from either quarterback, was watching Trojans and Trailer Park Boys. 28-18. Trojans, I have to say, they have some good athletes and they really made it work for them, but the play calling was a bit of a disaster, and I feel like they're going to struggle when they can't just win all the matchups with their athletes. Again, beating Trailer Park Boys 28-18.
It is week one, though.
It is week one, and their new team, Alexandre Fafar, he's the only experienced member really on Trojans, and he was quite efficient at quarterback, but It was a lot of guys just continuing to move and get open as we saw a little too much man from Trailer Park Boys just as they got frustrated early on.
It's something we see in lower divisions where the whole scrambling, find guys open, break a play open sort of thing happens. I think it's mistiming with the whole QB snapper coordination, getting the snaps, playing with the rusher. Given a few weeks, I think we're going to see a few more plays that are going to be a bit more explosive, less scrambly breaking plays sort of thing.
Well, for Trailer Park Boys, you hope that whatever's all around is all around. And they did seem disorganized. It was tough to watch because on defense, they're just not communicating. Just too many. Everyone's talking at all times to try and try and figure out what to do on offense. And everyone's calling their number. Everyone's calling their, like, the thing is, there needs to be someone to take the lead. And they appear to all be, like, its entire roster of 55 ratings. It doesn't appear as though they have anyone new, anyone experienced on the team to help. So in the past, what we've said is before, if you ever see us at the field or if you want to reach out to us, you can reach us on social media. Yeah. We're all very available.
You can message us now on Facebook Live and we'll answer you during the show.
And Eagle and I, in the past, have helped a lot of teams.
Ever send that email?
No. I know. I feel bad. But normally I do. Normally we do get back to teams really quickly. We do want to help. And it's FPF's a community above all else. So the reason I want to talk about this game is not really to take a dump all over them, but really to tell teams we're here to offer help. Same thing for Trailer Park, for Trojans rather. You know, you're not bad. There's some good things there. There's some great athletes on the team. But if you need help learning how to work in different parts of the field, red zone, or even just like, you know, do you have a couple of plays that can help free up this player or help, you know, that can be easier to read? We can help you with that on defense. Are there things you can do to improve? I think both of these teams will struggle moving forward. They got sort of lucky facing each other in the first week, but we'll have to see how.
Well, lucky, but it also helps that they sort of got that first game out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Now they know what FPF is. They have a better idea of what's going to happen and stuff like that. But for sure, if you're confused, you don't know what to do on defense, this doesn't seem to work, reach out to either of us. You could also ask the scorekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
Mokan
looks other teams.
Like, Mokan looks like a douche, but he's not.
Depends on the day. And if you work at Bell, if you work at the Bell complex.
Papineau. Any other complex, really.
What were you babbling about the high school cafeterias like before the show?
Yes.
I don't know what you were talking about. I was half listening.
So at some point recently, I overheard this, and I'm not sure if it actually happened or not. But
overheard it from who?
I'm pretty sure it was a TV, but or the news or some shit.
Or like a cab
but
driver.
I think it's like because the elections are coming up, mm-hmm. and some party brought up the idea that cafeterias should have like discounts for kids that are poorer.
They have that already.
That's already a program.
Yeah, but like, they want to make it like bigger, okay. like a dollar lunches or something like that. Right. So what if everybody in the school was forced to buy it from the cafeteria lunches? Wouldn't the cafeteria now become like, if you have more people going to the restaurant, isn't your restaurant suddenly become better because you have more money so you could buy better food?
But where's the money? So cafeterias and schools in general already operate at a loss.
I know. But what I'm saying is if they could... If you make 50 meals, you can only mingle with so much. But if you make it 200 meals a day, you have more stuff to play with.
Right? Are you trying to argue restaurant logistics with the guy who runs a culinary
No,
program?
I'm not arguing. I'm trying to...
So the meal costs you how much?
No, but let's say...
Stop, Simone. You're going to lose.
No, you don't understand my point.
Someone who's on this meal plan, a student who pays a regular price, pays how much?
I think it's $5.
Means that... The meal would have had to have cost three times less to operate at a profit. And now we're compensating
for the
$1.
I
understand, but you need to make a profit to buy the food, to serve 200 people, and charge discounted rates.
Yeah. No, but you don't need to make... My point is the cafeteria food sucks.
Not necessarily. Yeah, so, it does. Well, the reason why it sucks is that they need to meet nutritional standards set by the government.
Yes.
And they need to do so while not... making enough money to run a restaurant.
Okay.
So what you do is you buy a ton of ground meat at a discount. You buy a ton of frozen vegetables at a discount.
Yeah, but if you add a bigger pool of money...
But just less because you then are distracting it to give to the students who are paying at a discount. And you're already not charging enough to the students.
No, but if you cook for more people...
But then you need to charge $20 a head to this property.
No, but you don't have to make great food.
Are you the only one who's lost? Am I the only one who's lost?
I told him to stop a long time
ago. So we're just going to move on. We're just going to move on to the next game.
You brought this up.
Before we move on to the next game, we do have some live comments.
All right.
This one's specifically for Simon. Hi. And Sean Avram wants to let you know that he's still banging your ex.
What's up, Sean?
I will say, though, your ex did say that of all the guys she slept with, he's ranked 10th out of 9. So, Bruins, they make a quarterback. They make a change of quarterback.
Bruins, yes.
They don't have Gab Wiseman throwing anymore.
Nope.
Are they better with Mathieu Ouimet, or is this just a one-game sample size?
If
Gab Wiseman playing with Diablos now.
If it's a one-game sample size, then I'm blown away. Because Mathieu
Ouimet... So it is a one-game sample size.
Mathieu Ouimet played really well, and I think that if this keeps going, if Bruins are this successful, score 38 points a game, then why would you go back to Gab Wiseman? Did he just lose his spot with the team forever? Right? Because if you found somebody else that's potentially more successful, there's no reason to go back to... If your new girlfriend's hotter, why would you go back to your less attractive ex?
Then again, you have to remember that you're also losing Gab Wiseman on defense, right? And the leadership and the whole thing. So as long as you have he's not just a quarterback on that team. He's actually an ample part of the entire logistics of how the team operates.
They also added Gabriel Poisson, though.
That helps.
Two touchdowns.
Monster player. He's so
good. Not a guy a lot of people know in the league.
So good.
He suffered Braves.
They still play with a hoodie?
I don't know. I didn't see it. I wasn't there for the game. I thought you were there because you gave me the topic.
No, Gabriel Poisson plays with a hoodie because it makes him sweat more.
Okay.
So it's a better workout.
Weird. Christoph Chatrin actually had a good game. I was thinking the wrong game. Matt Lerner needs to develop without the crutch that is Justin Lerner because you split the brothers. You're
yes.
a bad person.
I'm not a bad person. I asked
just Darren. You took just Darren McDasian and Justin Lerner away from the team.
Just Darren.
So
and
the
Justin
two
Lerner.
Best players on the team gone.
I asked Justin Lerner, do you want to play? He said yes. He said, can Darren also play?
So sure. How will you feel though if the two brothers never speak again?
I'm pretty. Do they live together?
I don't know.
Neither do I.
But what if they never speak again?
No, I have no.
Stop changing the subject.
I don't mind. I don't know him.
Simon Dagenais.
Sorry, Matt Lerner.
The other game I want to touch on really quick. It's a tie. It's a gross game. Jean-Guy and replacements. Christopher Shotkin actually played pretty well. Same for Frank Tioli Colatrella. But, you know, it's great for guys who have run typically struggling offenses. But what can each of these guys do? So take a quick moment to spotlight on both Christopher Chartrand and Frank Tioli Colatrella separately. What can these guys do to specifically improve their game?
Chris Chartrand needs to play less plays. Have two or three plays that works really well. Learn them really well. Learn how to read them, progress through them, and only call two or three plays a game. You don't need really more than that, because if you change your reads, it feels like a different play. If you try to call too many different plays, you get confused. You don't really get the hang of the plays. And by the time the season's over, you never really mastered them. For Frank Tioli, I would say he needs to run more. From what I've seen the past few seasons,
he's a great athlete.
The winter and spring, he's a great athlete. You should use that more to his advantage. Become a dual threat quarterback. Make people think that you're going to run every second play, and use that to your advantage, because the rush is going to slow down. You're going to have more time as a quarterback to throw, and then throw the ball. Don't necessarily want to run all the time, but make sure people think that you could.
Yeah, even sometimes just moving in the pocket to open up windows.
Yep.
Seven separate receivers for replacements, between two and three receptions each, which is pretty impressive. Really means, well, first off, it means that your offense is subbing regularly.
They do. They have a big roster and they rotate a lot of guys.
Yeah, which is both a good thing and a bad thing. But also, it means the ball's being distributed across the board. And I'm not sure if it's that by design or it's something that just happens.
Yeah, I don't know if it's by design or just happens. I would say most likely it sort of just happened in this game. I know that Frank doesn't necessarily key on one guy consistently, but I think just guys were open at different times during the game, and it just happened that way.
You wearing your Nikes today?
My what?
Your Nikes.
Not today, no.
Not today, I am. I wore them probably.
I did not burn them. I did not throw them away.
So, burning merchandise you already purchased from an organization, you realize that has no impact on the organization?
No whatsoever.
All right, cool. Colin Kaepernick, for those of you who don't know, now the lead spokesperson for the new Nike campaign. I've never understood anything regarding the division of the demonstration and kneeling during the national anthem. A song built on protest. A song built on rebellion.
On freedom of speech.
On freedom of speech. A song that guarantees the freedom of speech. During a time where people are talking, going to concession stands, arriving late, having sex in the bathroom. A guy who's observing silence and peacefully demonstrating, not protesting, in order to get
But even if he was protesting peacefully, which is what the United States are built on. They want people to protest peacefully
at all times. Civil disobedience.
Right. That's what he's doing, but people are throwing rocks at him.
And he's been since denied employment.
Potentially.
So far, that case looks good for him. Potentially. We all know it's true, though.
Yes.
Being denied employment in a collectively bargained arena where that guarantees him employment and protection for his beliefs. It's not like the NBA, where it's part of the collective agreement to stand and observe the national anthem because both parties agreed to it.
Yeah.
It has not been agreed to upon in the NFL collective bargaining agreement.
It's crazy.
I find the whole thing strange. I find it bizarre that it's become a political issue. I find it bizarre because, again, the whole idea was to get people talking about, hey, maybe we should look into the fact that...
And it worked.
And so while it does worry me...
I would say it didn't work because they're talking about something different. They let them shape the message.
Yeah, but some people are still...
But I will say while it is interesting and difficult for... to see an idea and see an ideology be sort of become co-opted by an organization, it is going to get more attention out there on it.
100%.
So that to me is what I find interesting. And yes, it has been, the message has been changed. But to me, this is sort of like a refocusing of that message. So I'm happy to see it. And Nike's always been sort of rebels. They ran during the Atlanta Olympics, they ran an illegal marketing campaign that put Nike on the map.
But they've been doing it for a very long time now. They've been always behind their athletes against the bigger brands. Look at Serena Williams a few weeks ago with tennis. You're not allowed to wear the clothes you want to wear anymore.
Sports can't be fun.
Because why not?
Simo, final thoughts.
Calling the audibles back, football's back, NFL's back. I'm very happy.
Final thoughts, Eagle?
Yes.
So no.
He's a yes man.
This week, am I going for one, going for two? I will go for two. First of all, first week, everyone, welcome back. It's a little bit of a shorter show. Not much happened this week. It's a short slate of games.
Only 11 games out of 24.
And right? We want to leave some of the stuff for the articles, too, for myself and Fonso Martin, the two writers for the division to cover. My article will be coming out shortly, so look for that. My second part of my going for two, a special congratulations to our very own GM Kalethris, got married to the beautiful Kate Allen this weekend. Great ceremony. Myself and Eagle were there. Snow, you're a piece of garbage.
I was very safe.
I don't care. Piece of garbage. Didn't make it out to the wedding.
You knew 3 months in advance you didn't show up.
Exactly. Well, for
shame.
All,
hey, piece of garbage. Am I going for two? Hashtag marrying the audible. Thank you, guys. And remember, good night.